It's Monday, October 19th, and it's time to stop worrying about a third wave because it's already arrived. We start here. With cases rising in nearly 40 states, hospitals are starting to overflow.
I'm seeing a very dire situation.
What separates this wave from the others we've seen so far? A week after a governor was informed of a kidnapping and murder plot, the president calls her a criminal.
Oh my God, somebody's throwing something at me.
Are you serious?
Yes.
It's getting more heated, not less. Our team heads to Michigan for answers. And he tried to teach his class a lesson about extremism. Now he's dead.
This was different because a teacher was attacked. And that is something new.
The grisly murder that has led to outrage in France. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. The phrase global pandemic is pretty redundant, right? If it's a pandemic, it's global. But there are still hot spots and not so hot spots. And when the US reached 100,000 deaths from COVID-19 this spring, it was primarily because of huge surges in states along the coast.
In just 3 months, unimaginable loss across the country, from a nursing home in Washington state to overwhelmed emergency rooms in New York.
Well, then there were another 100,000 deaths. Again, huge chunk of cases were happening in a handful of states. This time, though, different ones, mostly in the southern half of the country.
The death toll nearly doubling in just 116 days, and almost 7 months into the pandemic, the infection rate remains at nearly 5%.
Well, this weekend, it became clear that another peak is unfolding before our eyes. Hospitalizations have surged. Doctors fear deaths cannot be far behind. And what's different about this surge is it seemingly happening everywhere.
39 states and Washington, D.C. seeing increases in cases, hospitalizations rising in 41 states.
We are in a new wave here. Anybody that hasn't noticed this, turn on the television.
I want to start the week with an expert that studies how viruses spread. Dr. John Brownstein is an epidemiologist who teaches at Harvard Medical School and is the chief innovation officer at Boston Children's Hospital. He's also an ABC contributor. Dr. Brownstein, when you look around the U.S. right now, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I'm seeing a very dire situation in terms of the numbers of states that are experiencing major increases. And yes, we're seeing increases in cases because there is more transmission, but also more testing. The metric that really gets me concerned is this increase in hospitalizations that we're seeing.
41 states now reporting rising hospitalizations as the virus ravages much of the Midwest and Mountain West.
You know, this has taken a turn into sort of almost a third wave of increase in hospitalizations. And as we know, the hospitalizations are a sort of an early warning of increasing mortality that we'll see in the coming weeks. And that's the real concern that we're seeing as far as this third wave is concerned.
Right. And so the cases seem more spread out than I'm wondering, purely from an epidemiological perspective, mm-hmm. would you, Dr. Brownstein, rather have 1,000 cases in 10 states or 10,000 cases in one state? Like, is it better or worse to have it spread out like this?
Yeah, well, you know, there's pros and cons to that. I mean, clearly, concentrated cases means that you can focus your response. But the problem really comes down to overloading of a health system. And so when you have these major increases, you know, it's not purely about the cases because such a large portion of the population will handle the virus okay. But when it comes to those who are vulnerable, have underlying chronic conditions mm-hmm. that lead to hospitalizations.
But so I'm saying, though, is there less reason to worry if it is spread out between all these hospital systems? It's not just all New York or Florida.
Yeah, but I would push back on you on that in that there are many states that are in really deep problematic transmission. If you look at, say, Wisconsin as an example.
The state said it will open a field hospital near Milwaukee.
To be clear, this is going to get worse before it gets better.
Health systems are overloaded. They've had to create additional capacity to handle cases. So, you know, we have multiple fires this time spread across large geography. So that raises my concern level significantly.
You can't enter into the cool months of the fall and the cold months of the winter with a high community infection baseline.
What's also different about, you know, this third wave is that we're going to have an increase in other respiratory viruses like influenza.
As fall comes up, it's important to know there's one more thing that we can do, and that's get our flu shot. 40,000 people died last year from the flu.
We, you know, model capacity as health systems to account for influx when it comes to flu season. The models don't necessarily account for an additional COVID on top of that. And so you put all these in the mix, that's going to create a huge strain on our health system and a huge strain on our ability to keep people alive, frankly.
Asked about a potential national lockdown, Dr. Anthony Fauci saying that would only happen if the situation became really, really bad, as the country is fatigued with restrictions.
We want to use public health measures not to get in the way of opening the economy, but to being a safe gateway to opening the economy.
So the strategies then, like at the state, the local level, the national level, are they going to be different than previous ones? Because wear a mask, stay socially distanced, wash your hands, like we know that. But does the game plan change based on what this wave looks like?
No, we've been saying the same things all along, frankly. And it, you know, I'm sure for many people, including myself, it's getting very tiresome. Social distancing, mask wearing, you know, limit indoor congregation. I mean, the big issue here is that there are many schools that are open or many schools that are trying to reopen. And so we should be doing everything we possibly can to keep, you know, education going while trying to, you know, intervene in other ways. And
so,
you know,
so that is a doable priority for you, like in terms of things that should close. If it starts getting bad, you're saying schools should go at the bottom of the list.
Do everything we can to keep schools open. So many schools have come up with the right protocols to keep kids safe, to limit transmission, to keep kids home if there was potential clusters of cases. So do everything you can to keep schools open, potentially at the expense of other things that we might prioritize.
And we talk about national numbers, state numbers. Like you said, in some states, the worst outbreaks are limited to a couple cities. And so in New York, they're now talking about shutdowns, not just in cities, but like particular zip codes, specific neighborhoods sometimes, block by block. So that's another question in this moment, is how surgical governors and mayors will want to be. Dr. John Brownstein, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Next up on Start Here, the week after an alleged terrorist plot was foiled, the president kicks the volume up a notch. We're back in a bit. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tomorrow, we will be exactly 2 weeks from Election Day. That is the point where you're going to stop hearing about how many weeks are left to how many days are left. And as of this morning, between polls, the economy, and the time remaining, our friends at 538 give Joe Biden an 87 out of 100 chance of becoming the next president.
Guess what? That is exactly the same percentage that Hillary Clinton had on this date 4 years ago. Her odds went down from there, and we all know how it ended up. So, taking nothing for granted, the Trump and Biden campaigns are racing around the country doing rallies, President Trump packing as many people together as possible.
You know, we're supposed to be way behind until Election Day when all the Republicans go, and you're gonna have a red wave like you've never seen before.
At a rally in Michigan this weekend, the president talked about his challengers, past and present.
Lock them all up.
He agreed that they should be locked up, but he wasn't just talking about them.
You got to get your governor to open up your state, okay?
He was also talking about the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, who had just been named a week earlier as the potential victim in a terrorist plot.
Whitmer responding to Trump's comments in a tweet, writing, "This is exactly the rhetoric that has put me, my family, and other government officials' lives in danger."
You blame me, and our people were the ones that worked with her people. So let's see what happens.
And heading into that weekend, our own Juju Chang, co-anchor of ABC's Nightline, was in the state to learn more about this plot and its connection to our politics. In fact, the day before the president's rally, she'd actually wrapped an interview with Whitmer herself. She's got a piece about this airing on Nightline tonight. Hey, Juju.
Hey, Brad. How are you?
I'm all right. So we learned a couple weeks ago that between the federal and state authorities, there were like 13 arrests in this investigation. Then late last week, there's a 14th. So clearly, in the eyes of authorities, Juju, this is not just some crazy guy on a message board somewhere. What did Whitmer say about what she's learned of the charges since then?
Well, she has long known about these threats because her security detail told her about it a couple months ago.
I've always been focused on saving lives throughout this pandemic. And so the fact that some people would react by threatening my own was unsettling.
But basically, this is a serious threat against the governor's life. And she was telling me that she had to talk to her daughters about the fact that this plot was being, you know, hatched against her.
We've had people show up on the front lawn with automatic rifles on more than a handful of weekends. And so I've had an ongoing dialogue with my daughters because I want them to know what is happening. I don't want them to be blindsided and I don't want them to be unsafe.
The FBI and state authorities conducting a series of raids in Michigan. Those 13 suspects taken into custody, seven of them alleged members of that right-wing militia group.
It reads like something out of a bad spy novel. It's a group, they call themselves the Wolverine Watchmen, which comes from some splinter militia group. But the attorney general, who I sat down with, said these are not militia guys. These are potentially alleged domestic terrorists.
But if your purpose in assembling is to devise illegal acts and to plan illegal activities, now you're a criminal organization.
Their plot involved everything from storming the Capitol building with guns and bombs, kidnapping the governor and other lawmakers, as well as killing law enforcement officers.
Authorities claim the planning was months in the making, with the men even going to the governor's vacation home twice to conduct surveillance.
Then there was another plot that they were hatching. They were going to plant explosives on a bridge and kidnap her, show up on her front doorstep, and either put her on trial, quote unquote, in some sort of kangaroo-style court, or,
quote, have one person go to her house, knock on the door, and when she answers it, just cap her.
But let's be clear. We're talking about guys who want to run around in the woods with guns and say bad things about the government.
So the defense attorney to one of the suspects claims that these are just guys talking who like to run around in the forest and shoot guns.
Prosecutors revealing chilling new details. They say the suspects held training exercises.
Exhibit 2 shows four men getting out of a car and firing multiple rounds from assault-styled rifles.
Keep moving.
The person recording encouraging them to keep it up.
Yeah, and these charges, of course, aren't proven yet. But again, I just feel like this is why it even goes against instinct, because you hear how bizarre these alleged plans are, and you think, well, you know, how serious could these people have possibly been? But then, Juju, you went to the training site of this group, or some of the people involved with this group. What did you find there?
We went to two of the alleged training sites named in the criminal complaint. One of them is in a town called Munis, Michigan, which is about an hour or so north of Detroit.
Okay, so the neighbor told me that it's around the first curve just before the bridge, and that's it right there.
And as I was driving up to the suspect's home...
It's a pretty wooded, secluded area. No trespassing. Violators will be prosecuted. and a Confederate flag.
Suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a man rushing towards my vehicle.
Oh my God, somebody's throwing something at me.
Are you serious?
Yes.
At which point, I put my foot on the gas and got out of there. My cameraman
So you're saying you're there just to like get a lay of the land, and all of a sudden someone's physically coming at you?
Absolutely. Somebody was throwing something at me from the property where the alleged suspect was arrested. So this is, you know, it was a heart-stopping moment for me, absolutely.
We'll see as far as we can get there, but I don't think we're going to be able to get all the way down to the property there.
And then we also went to Luther, Michigan, which was another training ground, and one of the neighbors drove us into these public access roads where you could see, you know, sort of burnt out shells of areas that had clearly been seen for target practice with tons of munitions, because the man who took us there said,
unbelievable.
I'm a lifelong hunter. I've lived in these parts of the woods my entire life. I've never seen anything like this.
You know, it's not something normal that a normal target shooter would have.
In the spring, Trump tweeted out the words, quote, liberate Michigan. Unhappy with the state's strict coronavirus guidelines. The president talked about this on Fox.
And, you know, I see Whitmer today. She's complaining, but it was our Justice Department that arrested the people that she was complaining about. It was my Justice Department that arrested them.
Well, and as we move forward toward Election Day, then, because you heard the president saying, we did her a favor. That is generally not what you'd hear from law enforcement when perhaps they've just saved somebody's life. Like, it almost seemed like the president was offended that after all this, Whitmer comes out and blames Trump's rhetoric in part for fueling this kind of extremism. So then he goes and encourages people again, lock her up. So it does seem like there's this troubling feedback loop just a couple weeks out from everyone going to the polls.
Absolutely. He not only said she owes me a favor, she should have thanked me was his response. And Governor Whitmer told me that each time he had this kind of rhetoric that said, you know, that woman from Michigan.
Well, we just saw more hate language online. We saw the graphic nature of threats against me and my family grow exponentially. I mean, it turned the heat up.
She said we saw it time and time again, so much so that she reached out to the White House.
I actually reached out to the White House. I've reached out to leaders, Republican leaders here in Michigan, and asked everyone, can you turn the heat down? I'm getting concerned about what this might mean for me and for my family. And they fell on deaf ears, those requests.
I ask you to do me a favor. Suburban women, will you please like me?
Looking towards the election, Michigan polls are showing that Governor Whitmer is hugely popular among women, who are a crucial swing vote in that battleground state. 56% of women look at Governor Whitmer favorably. And, you know, President Trump, by comparison, is polling in the 40s for both favorability and, you know, job approval ratings. So it really is a question of whether President Trump's demeanor towards Governor Whitmer, the whole lock her up, the whole, you know, that woman from Michigan diatribe that he has been doubling down on, whether or not that is an effective campaign strategy in Michigan is an open question, because it seems as though it's not resonating well with women in Michigan.
All right. And an in-depth look at all of this on a special edition of Nightline Tonight. Juju Chang, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Every time, Brad.
We talked earlier about the potential of extremism leading to violence. American authorities say they uncovered that Michigan plot early enough, though. Well, in France, one person was not so lucky, and that nation was galvanized this weekend after news that a middle school history teacher had been brutally killed.
Now to that horrific terror attack outside Paris, a teacher decapitated on the street right in front of his school.
Police. Let's go to ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman, who's in France right now. James, it really does seem like this attack kind of halted the whole nation.
It really did, Brad. You know, people seem really to have traded social distancing for solidarity. They've come out in their thousands on the streets.
Oui,
6,000 here in Lyon, where I am, which is where Samuel Paty went to university. Thousands in Place de la République in Paris, but also in Nice, in Toulouse, Marseille, cities across France. Really, a lot of cities I've been to cover terror attacks. These are cities that have been hit in France. This is something this country has sadly seen many, many times before. And yeah, you know, the pandemic makes you think maybe that other issues aren't bubbling away, but of course they are. And masks were on full display, but it was all about freedom of expression. This man has become a symbol of freedom of expression in France because he was a teacher. Now, what we understand to have happened is on Friday night, he had finished teaching. He was identified by a young man, an 18-year-old, who we now understand was born in Moscow, but of Chechen origin, came over to live in France. He's been named as Abdelhak. He asked, apparently, students at the school to point out the teacher. So we know that this individual didn't have a relationship with the school necessarily. He approached Mr. Patti, attacked him with a knife, and beheaded him in full broad daylight on the side of the street.
Oh,
it has sent shockwaves across this country. He was approached by police, shot 10 times and killed. On his body afterwards, a phone was found with a text message and a photograph claiming responsibility. It was thought that he was hoping to then tweet that out. We've seen that time and time again, terrorists using social media. And now 11 people at least have now been arrested, his grandparents, his parents, his brother.
But that's the thing, James. I mean, when you hear about how many people were arrested, it seems less random, right? So there was the person from outside the school who kills this teacher, but certainly not just an out-of-the-blue killing, it appears.
Well, it was certainly not random. This Samuel Petit was targeted because about 10 days ago he was showing images of the Prophet Muhammad. These are the same images that were printed by the Charlie Hebdo magazine in 2015, and that prompted that major terror attack that killed 12 people in January of 2015. And that is why it's thought Abdelhak had a problem with this particular teacher. Tensions are running high in this country because the trial is ongoing in Paris for 14 suspects thought to have been who helped those Islamist attackers back in 2015. So it's part of a national debate at the moment, but no one ever thought it would come to this.
Is that kind of the thing that had everyone's attention already? Like, the Charlie Hebdo trials are happening. I think the magazine itself actually reprinted those images as they were starting. Or does it go beyond that? I guess I'm wondering what this murder and then the reaction in France says about where the country is right now.
Well, look, I mean, France is sadly used to these sorts of acts of terrorism. Not anything quite as barbaric as we saw on the streets of that Paris suburb on Friday night. But I've been to this country many, many times over the years to report on terrorist attacks. And it's become a part of life. You see armed police here. You see bollards on the streets to stop cars from mounting the pavements. But this was different because a teacher was attacked. And that is something new because it attacks the very thought of freedom of expression, of freedom of thought. And that goes to the heart of everything that France thinks it's about.
We will need time to think about what happened and to do what we do the best, educate children.
You know, we had President Macron speak about the fight against extremism being an existential one.
La République dans ses valeurs. Les Lumières.
He said it was an attempt to bring down the Republic. They feel very, very powerfully about this concept of laïcité, secularism, which is the liberty to believe or not to believe. And I was coming over here on the plane. I got off and we were on a bus and I overheard a mother speaking to her teenage son about it. He obviously hadn't been reading the news and she had. She felt so strongly. She was explaining to him what had happened. And she felt very deeply that the teacher had the right to explain about freedom of expression in that classroom, because critical thinking underpins everything that France believes in itself. And for a teacher to be attacked in this way, they are sacrosanct. It's something new. And that is why on Wednesday, there's going to be a massive march. And I just want to add one thing I thought was very, very powerful. I overheard, I've seen a French journalist, make this comment, because she said that the hope is that teachers will somehow be the solution to extremism in France, because extremism feels like it's this never-ending thing. But somehow, by teaching about tolerance, teachers could teach the next generation that extremism is not the answer. And this French journalist said that hope was beheaded on Friday night.
Like a powerful concept and powerful words. James Longman, there in Lyon in the south of France. Thanks so much, James.
Thanks.
And one last thing, who isn't fascinated taking a video tour of the Titanic wreckage?
Are you ready to go back to Titanic?
Well, there's a new underwater mission underway to recover the ship's radio equipment, the telegraph that sent messages asking for help. To do it, a recovery team will likely have to use a submersible with little robot arms, just like the scene in the movie.
I want to see what's under it.
Give me my hands, man.
This is a part of the ship that has never really been entered. So the question is, What do you do if you find human remains? Lawyers for the U.S. government have sued to block this expedition, saying, think about it. This is a room that's basically been frozen in time. If there's no current, bones could just be sitting there. It's barely been 100 years, so there are plenty of descendants of passengers to think about here. So is the Titanic an archaeology site or a burial ground? Now, it's not clear there will actually be any remains. Bodies outside the ship are long gone.
So it literally dissolved all the bones. Takes about 5 years, but the entire skeleton of a human at those depths will vanish. And what's left behind are their pairs of shoes, exactly as they were attached to the body.
But on the off chance the things inside are more intact, it's also more complicated because they will be videotaping this thing in real time. At what point do you turn the cameras off? Researchers point out they've never found remains in 200 other dives, that they would immediately pause if they found any. That's not good enough to some people who want the dead to rest in peace. Just wild to remember that the wreckage was only found in 1985. Like, on some level, we're still just figuring this stuff out of the fly. Start here tomorrow. Hit subscribe if you haven't already. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.